You're about to enter into a new world of knowledge, curiosities, and high strangeness. This is a podcast of Straight Up Strange Productions.
You're listening to Mysteries and Monsters. I'm your host, Paul Bestel. Welcome to a special Halloween edition of Mysteries and Monsters. Over the last few weeks, I've been asking you guys to send me some of your ghostly experiences, and you've not let me down. I've received several creepy tales from around the world from you, and so I'm going to regale you with some of those listener stories to try and chill your bones this Halloween. I've taken all these stories as first-hand accounts, and I hope they give you a spooky start to this most unusual of Halloweens. Pipes. Hi Paul. My story comes from an office where I still work, so I'll not mention the name, but it is in Sheffield, and as many offices are in the city, it used to be used in the manufacturing sector, so it's been refurbished, but kept some of its original fixtures and fittings. It's a big, open plan office, well lit with big windows, but I suppose when you first come into it, it must seem like a rabbit warren if you don't know your way around it. We'd work a variety of shifts throughout the week, and to be honest, if you worked the normal 9-to-5 shifts, you'd never notice anything unusual. With over 1,000 people working in the building, it is a bustling, busy place to be most of the time. I'd often wonder, with so many people in the office, all usually in casual clothing, just how easy it would be not to see something that would stand out. But over the years, so many people have come and gone. Often, you can see people one week and never see them again. I was based mostly on the first floor, and as someone who had worked in the building for over 20 years, I'd never really taken notice of some of the stories I'd heard from other staff about a certain wing in the building where odd things would happen. We'd occasionally talk about things in the pub after work on a Friday evening, and sometimes when people had become alcoholically lubricated, they'd admit to seeing and feeling strange things. It seemed that things always seemed to occur after the majority of staff had finished their shifts by 5 p.m, and a few of the unlucky ones would be having to do the 8 p.m. finish, as we all had to do at some of the time. Most people would mention catching a glimpse of something in the corner of their eye, hovering by the windows at the far end of the office that looked out over the little river. But whenever they'd turn their head, nothing would be there. Others would talk about the sensation of being watched, or that someone had walked through the office. Despite clearly seeing, no one was there. I'd often dismiss these stories as simple exaggerations, or people just having a laugh and trying to pull your leg. But one day, something strange happened to me that I still can't explain to this day. It was a dark November night, and I still remember it vividly. I was on one of the dreaded 8 p.m. finishes, and in my part of the office, there was probably just the three of us, all sat on different banks. It had just turned 7 p.m. The lines weren't particularly busy, so I was just browsing the internet, catching up with the news, and I got up to get a drink of water. I walked over to the cooler and filled up my bottle. As I returned to my desk, I was suddenly overcome with the overwhelming smell and aroma of pipe tobacco that seemed to be hanging over the bank. It was so pungent, I actually exclaimed, "Ugh!" As a non-smoker, tobacco is something that is very distinct to me, and obviously none of my co-workers smoked, and I wasn't aware of any of my colleagues that even smoked a pipe at all. I called one of my teammates over, and she too said, "Wow, you can really smell pipe tobacco." Our other teammate was on a call, but once he'd finished, he too came over to my bank and also confirmed that we could both smell the aroma. "Yep, that's definitely pipe smoke. You couldn't see it, but it was definitely just hanging in a defined area." Now, tobacco smoke usually smells pretty similar, but pipe tobacco is very distinct. It smells deeper and richer than normal cigarette smoke, and it certainly doesn't smell like marijuana. So it was pretty obvious what it wasn't. There were no windows open near me, and even if there were, they couldn't be opened. We were nowhere near the smoking area, which was far away at the back of the building. Plus, it was November, and who the hell has windows open in the north of England in November? The thing that struck me the most about it was, you could actually walk in and out of the aroma, a couple of steps away from my bank, and you couldn't smell the smoke at all. Two steps back towards it, and the smell just seemed to envelop you. I was really confused. I'd been sat there all day, and I had not noticed anything unusual or odd at all. And yet, there was clearly a cloud of aroma, just sitting there, and appeared from nowhere, hovering over my bank. Suddenly, the temperature dropped so dramatically that the hairs stood up on all three of our arms, and within seconds, the aroma had completely disappeared, and the temperature returned to normal. The whole incident probably lasted no more than a couple of minutes until the temperature dropped, and then everything seemed to return as it was. None of us could explain it. We looked for a rational explanation, and we found nothing that could explain the smell or the change in temperature. I'd worked that shift loads of times before, and I have since, and I've never had another reoccurrence of that incident. It wasn't frightening, just really confusing. But on speaking with some of my other colleagues who have worked until 8 p.m, a couple of them also said that they'd smelt pipe tobacco, but in very different parts of the office. Their incident seemed to last a similar amount of time, and then quickly dissipate, as quickly as ours did. I still work on that floor, but in a different part of the office now, and someone had the very same experience as I did last month. I'd love to experience it again, because it was so unusual. I've learned that the cleaners call this character Pipes, or Mr. Pipe, and it seems that whatever it is, it still makes an appearance on the floor from time to time. Hopefully, one day Pipes will pay me another visit, and maybe this time I'll try to talk to whatever it is. Thanks for reading my story, Paul, and keep up the great work. Masks at the window. Hi, Paul. This is an account of my only strange event so far. This account happened to me in 1982, when I was 15 years old. It took place just outside my hometown of Faversham, in the county of Kent, an area that is often referred to as the Garden of England. At the time, I was dating a girl who lived in the village of Sheldwich, just outside my hometown. It's in quite a rural area, surrounded by fields and woods. She lived with her parents in an old listed Grade 1 country house known as Lee's Court. Lee's Court was built in 1652 for George Saunders, the first Earl of Faversham, but it was destroyed entirely by fire on the 20th of November 1910 and painstakingly rebuilt in the next 2 years. The disaster was of such significance that it was even reported on the front page of the 21st of November edition of the New York Times. In the 1980s, the original stately home was subdivided into private apartments, along with the Grade 2 listed dairy court, estate house, courtyard and stable yard, whilst retaining many well-maintained gardens, parkland and grounds. My girlfriend lived in one of the newly converted ground floor apartments, in what had once been the main building. At the time, it all seemed very grand to me, and we often spent time walking around the grounds and the surrounding village. At weekends, my girlfriend sometimes babysat the children of the family who lived in the largest apartment of the old house. Their home was huge, part of which contained the original ballroom from the 1600s. I would often help her out, and then cycle home later that evening. I'm happy to admit that down that long drive away from the house and through the countryside, it got pretty frightening. On this occasion, the family were going to be out later than usual, and they suggested that I stay in their guest house. This was a separate building in the courtyard of the mansion house. On this occasion, the family were going to be out later than usual, and they suggested that I stay in their guest house, which was in a separate building in the courtyard of the mansion house. They got back well after midnight, and once I'd said a lengthy goodbye to my girlfriend, I went to the guest house and got ready for bed. Living in a town, I was used to the noise of passing traffic and the light from street lamps, but here there was no ambient sound or artificial light. We don't have the vast wilderness that people would expect in America, so these rural surroundings were still a pretty new experience for me, and I wasted no time in getting into bed and managed to fall asleep right away. I've never slept very well away from home, and to this day I'm always frustrated by frequently waking up when staying in a hotel room. I have no idea what time it was, but I remember waking up and taking a few seconds to realise where I was. I was about to go back to sleep when I saw what I can only describe as illuminated masks looking at me through the window. There were two or three of them, orange and white in colour, and they looked as if someone was shining a torch through a thin plastic face mask. The room was on the ground floor, and my mind tried to rationalise it as some children playing a prank on me, which was totally out of the question, given the late hour of the night. I couldn't be sure if the apparitions were inside or outside the room, but I remember that I was in no way frightened, which was unusual for me. I continued to look at the masks for a minute or so, and then I fell back asleep. The next morning, the experience was still very clear in my mind, and despite what I had seen, felt strangely normal. A little later, my girlfriend came to see me, and I told her about what I had seen, to which she said, "A lot of people have reported seeing strange things in the woods around here." She was what you would might call a little alternative, and was sensitive to certain vibes, so I took what she said without question. Being the typical teenager, my mind shifted to other things, and I didn't pursue the matter further. In those pre-internet days, there was no way to see just how many other people had had a similar experience. During the years since, I've often wondered what it was I saw that night. Was it a ghost? Will-o'-the-wisps? The English phenomenon of ghost lights seen dancing at night? Or was it just my imagination? My interest has recently been awoken after listening to Shannon LeGros' Into the Fray radio show, and I've done a bit of research on the internet. Whilst I can find no reference to any other paranormal activity in the village, there was a murder that took place in the original Lee's courthouse in 1655. The following is an extract from Sir Richard Faber's book, A Brother's Murder, Lee's Court, Sheldwich, 1655, which was published in 1993. At about 5 o'clock on the morning of Tuesday, the 7th of August, 1655, Freeman Saunders murdered his elder brother George, who was asleep in his bedroom at Lee's Court, Sheldwich. He hit George with the blunt side of a meat cleaver on the right side of his head about 5 times. Then he seems to have had a revulsion of feeling. His brother, mortally hurt but still alive, was writhing and moaning on his bed. So Freeman tried to put him out of his pain by striking him repeatedly with a dagger around his heart. I wonder, was it the ghost of the murdered George Saunders that I saw that night at Lee's Court? The locked door. I've been a cleaner in the office for several years, and is often the case, people would always try to wind each other up with stories of spooky goings-on when the building is empty, apart from us cleaners, and maybe someone doing some overtime. I always thought they were just winding me up, until I had an experience that still chills me to this day. It's a big building on 4 floors, but staff are only situated on the 2nd and 4th floor. The 1st and 3rd floors are made up of meeting rooms and stock rooms, all of varying shapes and sizes, and the only floor without toilet facilities is on the 1st. Every day, I usually start work at 4 p.m, and we decide where we need to clean first. Often, we would start with the empty floors, as most of the time, these would be empty from 4 p.m. onwards anyway. These are often the easiest to clean, just checking the bins, give the tables a wipe, and hoovering the floors. Each room takes about 5 or 10 minutes, if it's been used, and to be fair, most of the time, other than the bins, not much else needs attention in them. This particular day, I was doing the 3rd floor rooms, and it was after 6 p.m. There's a corridor that loops all the way around, so you can do a lap of the floor without turning around. None of the meeting rooms were occupied, and this floor has motion sensor lights, so unless you move around, The floor is often bathed in darkness. I had cleaned all the rooms and was just walking back towards the stairs when I heard the toilet door slam. As this was on my right-hand side, I presumed someone had just nipped from another floor, but then realised I hadn't heard anyone on the stairs, and the lifts were both situated on the ground floor. I looked across and also noticed that the lights outside the toilet were off, so it hadn't been activated. This struck me as odd, as it had come on when I had passed it doing my round 20 minutes earlier. I decided to double check, and as I approached the toilet, the light came on straight away. At this point, I began to feel a little apprehensive and nervous. Whilst practical jokes aren't unknown, I was struck at why the light was off when I heard the door slam. There was no way you could get into the toilet without this light coming on, so I nervously opened the door to check. As I entered the toilet, the cubicle door slammed shut and locked immediately. But there was clearly no one in it, as no shadow was being cast under the door. There's a gap of about 8 inches from the floor to the bottom of the cubicle door, so unless someone had stood on the toilet, there was no way to not see someone in there. I nervously called out, "Hello?" And suddenly, the cubicle door unlocked and swung open to reveal it completely empty. I felt the blood drain from my face and every hair on my neck stand up. I spun on my heels and ran out of there faster than you can imagine, straight up the stairs to the next floor, ran into the office, and I got my colleague. I was shaking like a leaf as I told her what had happened, so she decided she'd best go downstairs and check. I think at first she must have thought I was winding her up, but she soon realised that I was clearly terrified. I followed her, keeping a good few metres between ourselves as we went back down to the third floor. As we got to the bottom of the stairs, we could clearly hear the hand dryer going off, as it would when in use. But as we approached the door, once again, the motion light was still off, and we stood there. We heard the dryer stop, and the door slowly opened. Expecting someone to walk out, we noticed once again that the motion sensor lights didn't go off, and the door closed. My colleague turned to me and said, "Right, let's leave whatever that is to itself," and we both turned round and ran back up to the fourth floor. Neither of us can explain what happened that evening, and whilst my colleague is happy to clean that floor on her own, I will never go there on my own again, or without knowing that someone is in one of the meeting rooms. It's never happened since, and I know other people have heard the hand dryer go off on its own, but some people have heard footsteps in the corridor that leads to the canteen on the fourth floor, but no one ever turns up. I'm still working there, and I'll never forget what happened that day. It still gives me the chills to think about it. Thanks for listening to my story, and I hope it's good enough for your show. The Visitor. This story was submitted by Michael in Canada. This is my strange story of the weirdest, creepiest thing I've ever encountered. I'm not sure what it was, but it felt emotionally similar to being on a roller coaster. I live in St. Albert, Alberta, Canada, and a few years ago, I was at home watching the History Channel, having a coffee with some donuts, and I was sitting there with my two cats on our own. It was around 10 a.m. in the morning when I thought I heard three loud bangs at my back door, to which both cats sat up. I turned down the volume on the television, and again I definitely heard the same three loud bangs at the back door repeat themselves like an angry person pounding their fist on the door. Bang! 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 The glass pane in the door was rattling due to how loud and heavy the bangs were. Both of my cats got up and went into the hallway and began looking at the back door. They were both laid low to the ground. Then once again, the very same three loud bangs returned, and what sounded like something or someone's footsteps going down the basement stairs that were at that door. Suddenly, both cats bolted for the opposite side of the house. I got up slowly going into the kitchen to prepare for a confrontation, or I'm not sure what. So I grabbed the largest knife I had in the kitchen. At the end of the day, this is my house. You're leaving walking or being carried out, but either way, you're definitely leaving. I walked slowly to the back door basement stairs area, knife still clasped in my hand. The door was closed and locked. I looked outside through the window. It was snowing, and yet I could see no footprints anywhere, but I was sure I heard something go down the stairs and into the basement. I went downstairs, checked every room, even looking through the door cracks to be sure that no one was hiding behind them, before I went into each room, and could still find nothing. Suddenly, I thought I heard movement upstairs. I slowly went back up, and at this point, I was feeling confused, anxious, and very nervous. I began to feel all tingly, but once again, nothing was there either. I found both cats hiding under the master bed, looking scared and skittish, and it took about 30 minutes to lose the feeling of not being alone. And before the cats came out, a normality seemed to settle over the house again. I double-checked the door, and for footprints outside, and the basement once again. There was still nothing there, and no way someone could have approached that area and not left evidence. I don't know what this was, but I know the cats reacted, so it was clearly not just my imagination. I told my wife about the incident, but she just brushed me off and said I was trying to scare her. However, a few weeks later, it happened to her. But this time, it was at night. She was actually looking out of the kitchen window at the back door and heard the same three loud bang, bang, bang on the back door. But no one was there. This never happened again to either of us. I still don't know what it was. I know it wasn't caused by traffic, as it should have been repeated over the years, and we would have been able to hear it more regularly. And it clearly wasn't a prankster, because there was no footprints in the snow, and that showed that. It was truly strange, and as I said emotionally, it left me feeling like I was on a roller coaster. I remember when we first moved in, though, my cats sometimes would just get up and stare intently down the hallway. But hey, we all know cats are weird, and I used to joke they do that because they know it freaks people out. Now I sometimes wonder. The surgery ghost. Here's a weird one, Paul. Back in the early 1980s, my father worked as a GP at a surgery in Aylesbury. Like most GPs, he was fairly hard bitten and had seen it all. Anyway, I recall him coming back home late one night as white as a sheet and pouring himself a stiff whiskey. Apparently, he had called in at the surgery, and as he was walking along a corridor, being the only person there, he felt a strong presence, looking behind him to see a grey shadow following him along the wall. It terrified him, and he left the surgery as quickly as he could. As the figure moved along the wall, the lights went on and off. A receptionist who worked at the same surgery had been frightened one day to feel a hand placed on her shoulder, and she turned round to see a tall, grey figure standing over her. I seem to recall that the surgery had been extended, and in the process of the building work, a grave had been uncovered. I also remember as a child playing in a small patch of woods next to the surgery, where an old house had once stood and had been demolished, and seeing some graves, possibly a family plot. All of it was cleared to make way for development, and the surgery was probably built in the 1970s. The location was in an old part of the village, which had been absorbed into the town. Also, my father recalls being followed upstairs by a dark shadow when he lived in an old house in Hounslow in London, and being followed home by a small ghost dog. So perhaps he was particularly sensitive to such things. The wind. Hi, Paul. Here's my story, which turned me from a sceptic to a believer of the paranormal. I'm a joiner by trade, and often do work for private clients in their homes. This sees me visit some pretty nice homes, and I fitted all sorts, from kitchens, stairwells, banisters and bookcases. At this one particular job, I was fitting a custom-made bookshelf in a drawing room in a big house in a very posh area of Sheffield. The owner was nice and attentive, and would often bring me a sandwich and as much tea and coffee as I could drink. One particular day, she had to go into town to pick up some books that she'd ordered, so she told me to help myself to a drink if I needed, and she'd be back home within a couple of hours. Anyway, I was pottering about, making sure the bookcase looked the business. I take great pride in my work, and as I was making sure everything was level on the section I was completing, I heard a noise in the next room, which was a utility room. It sounded like someone had shut the washing machine door, and this struck me as odd, as the homeowner had literally been left 30 minutes or so, and I definitely hadn't heard her return. I brushed it off and carried on, but once again, a couple of minutes later, it happened. So I began to think that perhaps someone had sneaked into the house. So I picked up my spirit level and tiptoed out of the drawing room, approaching the utility room. It was a bright and sunny day, so I could clearly see that no one was in there, and the washing machine door was wide open. I moved towards the doorway, and as I stepped over the threshold of the utility room, the strangest thing happened to me. All of a sudden, a gust of wind seemed to shoot down over my shoulder, around my chest, down my back, and back up between my legs. It felt like something was moving so quickly over and around me that I actually spun round to check that no one was there, spirit level raised over my head. Nothing and nobody was there. It happened in a matter of seconds, but I suddenly noticed I was absolutely freezing cold, despite being stood in direct sunlight. I shivered and stepped back out of the utility room into the hallway. I regained my composure and returned to the utility room, but this time nothing happened at all. I felt odd though, like the atmosphere was different, almost heavy, you know, and thought I'd best have a strong cup of tea to bring myself round. As I walked away from the room towards the kitchen, once again I heard the distinct click of the washing machine door close, so I hastened my pace into the kitchen, made a cuppa, and sat there for a good 20 minutes or so until I had calmed down a bit. I made myself a fresh brew and returned to my bookcase in the drawing room to continue working. About an hour later, the homeowner returned and I continued working with no further occurrences. It took me about 4 days to finish installing and preparing the bookcase, and as I was about to leave, the owner and I were having a drink when I mentioned what had happened. She looked at me and simply said quite matter-of-factly, "Oh yes, it happens to people quite often in there. I just wish it would stop it now. It's getting quite frustrating." I took my payment, thanked her for her hospitality, and left. I've seen her a couple of times since, but we've never mentioned it, and I'm not sure I fancy doing any more work there on.
Welcome to Kraken Murray, the biggest liquid hydrocarbon ocean on Saturn's moon Titan.
And this is just one of the places you get to visit and learn about when you listen to the Hostile Worlds podcast.
The Hostile Worlds podcast, which is, of course, a science-based audio drama documentary series that teaches you all about our universe in a fun and entertaining way.
Head on over to hostileworlds.net to subscribe on your podcast app of choice.
My own again. The train driver. "Hello, Paul. My name is John. I come from Glasgow and work as a nurse in an operating theatre. I've had about 4 ghostly encounters in my life, and this one is one of the more interesting ones. Me, my wife and daughter went to a log cabin about 2 years ago in Strathea in Colander with Forest Holidays. When we arrived in the afternoon, we checked in and then booked a trip with the park ranger for the next day to show us around and show us the things like what berries you could eat and stuff like that. The cabin was lovely with a hot tub outside facing a loch known as Loch Lubnaig. So in the living room, it had a staircase going up to the room which had a small landing in it where you could stand and look down. So as the night went on, myself and my 14-year-old daughter went up to the bedroom and lay on the beds talking. She soon fell asleep, so I turned the lamp off in the room. But it hadn't been completely darkened, as the light from the TV was illuminating the doorway. As I was about to nod off, I noticed something in the corner of my eye. and as I turned towards the door, there was a tall, dark, shadowy figure, standing half in the doorway looking at me, and as it noticed me seeing it, it stepped backwards, out of the door. I shouted to my wife, "Did you come upstairs then?" And she replied, "No, I'm just lying here on the couch." At this point, my daughter woke up, but I didn't say anything as I didn't wish to frighten her. And my wife came up, and I asked her to stand in the same position in the doorway, and she was a lot smaller than the figure, as it was as high as the doorframe. At the time I had seen it, what caught my eye was that it was wearing a hat, which was high at the top, with a rim around it, and what came into my head was something to do with trains, like a driver, or some kind of train outfit. So, as you can imagine, this was our first night of our 4-day holiday, and it wasn't the best start to it. We slept with the light on every night after this, but the next day, we were out with the park ranger, and I was itching to discuss about what happened to us, but I couldn't pluck up the courage, so I asked about the history of the place instead. The park ranger advised us that down by the lock, there had been a train line that ran trains from Helensburgh to Inverness at the beginning of the last century, and there had been rumours that there had been a train crash and some fatalities. Well, my heart sank as the memory of the figure came into my head as a train uniform, but I'm not sure why. Anyway, the park ranger said that she'd always thought they were old stories, until about 2 weeks ago, when a police diver unit came up and asked if it was okay for them to dive down to the wrecks at the bottom of the lock. She was surprised by this request and questioned what wreck could they possibly mean. And the diver replied, "The train wreck that crashed at the beginning of last century. There's still a carriage down there." At this point, my heart began to race. I went back to the cabin, got on the internet, and sure enough, in the early 1900s, there had been a train crash, and there had been fatalities at that site. Not long after, they stopped the service, and the line was left to go derelict. That's my story, Paul. It's 100% true. I haven't made anything up. The rest of the trip was completely uneventful. We saw nothing else, and nothing else happened at all. But when it came to night time, it was still a bit scary, as it was pitch black out there. Thanks again. Love the show. Keep up the good work. The Child's Foot. Hi, Paul. Here's my experience from a few years ago. We went to Country Baskets in Leeds, based at the old Ambler's Mill, which housed worsted spinners from the mid-19th century. But as technology took over, the mill was closed and fell into disrepair until it was reopened as the new business back in 1990. When we'd finished looking round the building, I needed to go to the toilet. It's an incredibly old building, and the toilets are situated on the ground floor. So my partner waited outside near the exit for me, and there was only one exit. I entered the toilet, and noticed there were just two cubicles as I entered. The toilet was completely empty, and neither cubicle was in use at all. So I chose one, and as I sat down, I saw a bare foot appear under the adjoining wall that separated the two cubicles. It was small, childlike, but very pale, almost white in colour. It was there for a second and went away quickly. I was shocked and ran out of the toilet, grabbing my partner and telling him we needed to go, as I was that scared. What I was unaware of, whilst I saw the small foot in the toilet, where my partner was stood outside waiting for me, he saw a young boy passing by the doorway of the exit, and a child looked back at him. He went to see where the boy had gone, because he thought the boy looked so pale, he was concerned. But he had just disappeared without trace. The experience really shook me up as it left me very frightened. It just didn't feel right at all. I have to say, it frightened me so much. I was hysterical, which my partner can vouch for. I've tried to find out if anyone else has heard anything about the building or had any other experiences, but I've not found out anything so far. It's easily the scariest experience of my life, and I still think about it to this day. Our final two stories have both been sent in by listeners. First up is Darren from the Northeast, and finally, cryptozoologist Richard Freeman tells us about a strange experience where he feels he may have come across something a little more unusual than just a ghost. Happy Halloween, and thank you for your support. Take care.
I love the show. I'd like to tell what the story is when I was young. When I was young, there used to be this tall, dark figure that used to stand beside my window in my bedroom. I used to have a cabin bed, and it just used to stand there, and it used to feel like an evil presence all the time. And I'd just pull the covers over my head and go to sleep, try to ignore it. At the time, it was only me and my mum living together while my dad was in jail, so I didn't want to worry her. So anyway, I used to hide under covers all the time with it. But one time, I had chicken pox or measles, and it would bear me if I had the covers over me or anything like that. And the thing never used to move from where it was all the time. But this time, while I was laid there, I felt some cold hand on my head and say, "You're all right, James." But it was in my cousin's voice, who'd already died. I opened my eyes and looked, couldn't see nothing there at first, but then turned the side and I seen this dark figure what was always there, was stood right next to my bed and felt so evil. And I jumped off my bed and I had a lampshade what was a hot air balloon. I swung off that air balloon off the bed, threw the door, fell on my back, hurt myself, ran downstairs to my this time my dad had just come out of jail as well. And I ran downstairs to my parents, told me that there was a man in the bedroom. Told them there was a man in the bedroom. And they come running up to check. Once they seen the wiring was all pulled out the roof and everything, my dad gave me a smack and told me to go back to bed and stop being stupid. And he thought that I'd actually just ripped the wiring out the roof and was telling a story to make an excuse up about it. So even though I had the measles, I still pulled the cover off my head that night and was very scared all night trying to get to sleep. For the night after that, I'd climb inside my cabin bed from underneath and sleep like underneath my cabin bed instead, inside, to hide from it. The next time what had done something was my dad was still out of jail at the time. Asked me to go up in the attic to get him some tools. And there was a lock on the attic and everything as well. I walked up in the attic to go get the tools. And when I walked up there, I heard this noise coming from behind the curtain, which was my dad's side where he kept everything. And it was like a but dead deep, like kind of breathing, really scary. So I ran to go back down the stairs. The door slammed at the bottom of the attic stairs. And I tried to open it and open it. I couldn't open it. And this thing, whatever it was, feeling dead evil, started walking dead slowly to the top of the stairs and then down the stairs, step by step, very slowly, breathing really horrible noise. I did want to get away, so I started banging the door, screaming and shouting. My dad come up, opened the door, went mad with me again, give me a smack. From then on, I kept like hiding under the bed. We had to move because the houses were getting knocked down. And when we moved, went back to that same house with a big group of my friends to get my bikes back and my go-karts and stuff like that. So me and my friends went into the attic to try and get them back. And when we went to the attic to try and get them back, the same thing made a massive bang and an evil noise, an evil breathing, and shout at the same time, "Hey!" with this big bang. We all ran out the house, left all the bikes. Back then, in the 80s, bikes were really expensive and shouldn't have left them behind, but we didn't dare go back for them after that. I asked my uncle and my granddad to go back for the bikes. And this was 3 days before the houses were due to get knocked down. And they found a homeless person hanged in the attic at the top, so got made into a police inquiry site until the house got knocked down. So never got the bikes back, but I still think the homeless person hung himself in the attic after, probably done it because of that evil spirit. Thank you anyway, love the show.
This thing that happened was about 20 years ago. It was around about the year 2000. And throughout my life, I've had one or two, you know, strange things happen to me. But this is by far the most bizarre. It was an autumn night. I think it was September, if I remember. It was around about twilight, and it was starting to drizzle. And myself and three other people had gone up in a car to look for a stone circle called Scorrel, which is up on Dartmoor. It's the biggest stone circle on Dartmoor. And I'd never been there before. I've been several times since, but one of my friends knew the way. We parked up, and in order to get there, we had to walk through several fields which had dry stone walls. And it was, you know, it was twilight, but it wasn't dark. You could still see the other side of the field. And we walked into this field, which was maybe a few hundred feet across. And we couldn't find our way out. And we were wandering around this field aimlessly, trying to find the gate at the other side. And it seemed like an awful lot of time was going by. And the best way I can describe it is it had a sort of weird dreamlike quality about it, as if something was not quite real, as if you were walking through a dream. And then I noticed it had got a hell of a lot darker very suddenly. So I was thinking, why the hell is it taking us so long to get out of this field? And we were just wandering round and round aimlessly, not able to find the gate at the other side. And then all of a sudden, beside the dry stone wall appeared a ring of lights, upright, about 5 feet across, reminding me a little bit of a big wheel you get at a fair, illuminated. And these were sort of bluish white lights. And I said, look at that. And everybody saw these lights. And then they sort of winked out as if they'd just been switched off. And before we could really puzzle out what the hell was going on, the lights came on again. But this time they were a different configuration. They were like the outline of a person, once again about 5 feet tall, quite crude outline of a person, a little bit like the symbol you see on public toilet doors for men and women. It was like the male one, with sort of very crudely outlined arms and legs, but the arms and legs were together, they were not splayed apart, and the head seemed to sit directly on the shoulders. It didn't have much of a neck, but it was an outline in lights, these same odd bluish white lights. And I dawned, this isn't right, something is going on. And I remembered the old stories of people being pixie-led on Dartmoor. Pixies are these sort of type of pointy-eared, long-nosed, pointy-chinned fairies that are supposed to live on Dartmoor. Long-pointed red hats. And they're mischievous and like to lead people astray, and at their worst, downright dangerous. They're not sort of like the sort of gossamer winged Disney idea of fairies. And there's an old trick you're supposed to do if you've been pixie led, which means you're under the spell of the pixies, is you either turn your pockets inside out or you take your coat off and turn it inside out. I said, listen, everybody, take your coats off, turn them inside out. That's a really weird thing to say to other people out of the blue, but they all did it instantly. Nobody questioned it. They all just did it. And then this figure disappeared. And then there was the gate. and we went through the gate. And we must have been there 45 minutes in this field because it had gotten really dark by then. We went through the gate and we found this stone circle, and there were other people at this stone circle, and they'd been there for a while. They'd been camping there. And the weird thing is, we reached this stone circle after all this had happened in the field, and nobody spoke about it. Nobody really talked about what happened. But all four of us saw this thing. So I said, look at that. And everybody looked, and they saw it. But we never spoke about it ever since. And the whole thing had this weird dreamlike quality to it. I've had a couple of other experiences with strange lights. One in Tasmania, actually. But they didn't have that weird dreamlike quality to them.